At the Associated Student Senate meeting on April 17th, Senators Jeffrey Adler and Ephraim Shalanov introduced a resolution to investigate the circumstances of the April 10th Senate meeting, during which the recall petition to remove AS President Tessa Vexler was ratified by the Senate, but the recall election itself was rejected by them. This was a topic students at UCSB would likely find of interest after the year of controversy President Vexler faced. Student sponsors of the recall petition said they had brought it forward on the charge of Vexler not adequately representing student voices, particularly those of Muslim or pro-Palestinian students. The petition had over 800 verified signatures, over double of the required 327 it needed to make it to the Senate floor. The meeting started 2 hours late due to confusion over whether it would be held in person or not. After a series of AS-wide emails the day of the meeting from the internal vice president, Soham Kalia, which stated the meeting would first be on Zoom, then in person at Corinne Pavilion if a, quote, safety contingency plan, end quote, was in place, some senators, Kalia, and AS executive director Maricela Marquez began the meeting on Zoom. However, other senators had already begun to gather at Corinne Pavilion. This series of events led to confusion over when and where the meeting would take place, making it difficult for students outside of the AS loop to understand what was going on. The senators who remained in person, and who eventually got their way with the meeting starting at Corwin Pavilion at 8:30 p.m., included Senators Jeffrey Adler, Ephraim Shalanov, among others. To learn more about the resolution Senator Jeffrey Adler and Ephraim Shalanov had co-authored, I asked them to elaborate on what circumstances in particular they were concerned about. Adler spoke about the general confusion regarding the format of the meeting, as well as how he viewed this in comparison to a wider trend on campus regarding censorship.
In the days leading up to that meeting, I had really spoken with the entire Senate, and we'd come to a consensus that we wanted an in-person meeting. For one, this is like a huge issue of concern to the student body, and just making sure that we have public participation, accountability, transparency, letting the student voice be heard without any arbitrary barriers. And I thought we had come to a consensus the day before, and yet 2 hours before the meeting, I learned after a meeting between the internal vice president and some members of administration, they couldn't reach a comprehensive safety plan, and somehow the meeting had moved online. It just wasn't a lot of clarity and a lot of transparency, which I felt was lacking. And like, I think given the atmosphere of higher education today, like I'm sure people have read, like, a couple days ago, USC just announced that the pro-Palestinian valedictorian couldn't speak at her commencement ceremony because of safety concerns, right?
Adler is referring to USC valedictorian Usna Tabassum, a South Asian American biomedical engineering major whose commencement speech was canceled by the USC administration. USC cited potential safety risks in their reasoning. Vox reported that the provost Andrew T. Guzman told students the conversations about the valedictorian had become concerning and created a risk of disruption and safety issues at commencement. Guzman wrote in his email that the decision had nothing to do with freedom of speech, but Tabassum and other students believe this decision was due to her public support for the human rights of Palestinians. Prior to this decision, pro-Israel USC student groups such as Trojans for Israel and the Chabad Jewish Student Center had complained online about Tabassum's views, calling them anti-Semitic.
I think it's a broader, troubling trend across the country of universities seeking to preclude controversial speech because it's either unflattering or it's embarrassing, or in the case of UC Santa Barbara, it could lead to further consequences in the context of their Title VI investigation by the Department of Education. So I was just really in the dark about it. And Senator Shalanoff and I, despite our numerous vehement disagreements, we both thought that this was an issue of concern and we wanted to bring it to the attention of the student body. So
Shalanoff spoke about how despite him and Adler being on different ends of the spectrum on the issue of allowing the recall election to happen, Adler was a proponent and Shalanoff was an opponent. They both agreed it was important that this discussion happened in person.
Broadly, as a Senate, we agreed that it's in the interest of the student body to have our discussions as public as possible and according to our normal structure, and that means an in-person discussion. While Zoom is technically an option, it's really only a last resort, and that's because it doesn't actually afford the same level of actual discussion. We've seen that historically repeated over and over again, that you don't get the same level of discussion. And with both Tessa and the petitioners, there's a lot of emotionally charged sort of, this is a very emotionally charged situation. And in particular for Tessa, who's being targeted as an individual with a particular recall effort, But also for people who feel very passionate about it, we broadly agree that it's a disservice to allow that discussion to move to Zoom without a really good reason for it. And the actual circumstances of moving the meeting to Zoom were completely bizarre on a lot of levels. And among them, the fact that the internal vice president, Soham Kalia, didn't consult Senate or Senate leadership before making various decisions, but did provide us with a narrative of what had happened that was contradicted by a different narrative provided to us by university administrators. And so what we were trying to do is try to understand, like, where between these two narratives the truth lies.
In an email to Associated Students, Internal Vice President Soham Kalia said that the Vice Chancellor of Student Affairs, Margaret Clowoon, was adamant the meeting remained on Zoom unless a safety contingency plan was in place. The day of the meeting, the safety plan appeared to consist of CSO and UCPD presence inside the building. It was not immediately clear what the safety concerns were about, and senators did not seem to be aware of any concerns either. In a statement to KCSB News, Kalia stated the following, quote, "The meeting was always planned for Zoom at request of the Vice Chancellor of Student Affairs. I was happy to explore the idea of an in-person meeting at the Senate's request, but it turned out to be infeasible." End quote. He went on to say that, quote, "The location of a meeting is determined by the chair and only the chair. It is not a decision made by the Senate. I stand by the decision and I will choose transparency and safety of constituents and staff over the political favors of a few senators every single time," end quote. He also forwarded me correspondence from administrators, such as Executive Director of Associated Students Maricela Marquez, who expressed she was concerned about having an in-person meeting in case there was disagreement with Senate decisions and or a demonstration by the public in attendance, and said she would need to see a safety plan for senators and attendees. Vice Chancellor of Student Affairs Margaret Clowoon referred me to Executive Director of Associated Students Maricela Marquez for comment. Marquez said that because the recall petition was being spoken about, which was likely to have brought a lot of students in commentary, she communicated to Kalia that other options should be considered. She and Kalia came to the decision that it would first be best to have a Zoom meeting to take the potential for a large number of participants into account, especially because staff, including those at the USEN, AS, and UCPD, would have to be taken into account. Marquez went on to mention the November 15th meeting,
and the Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs, and really the Associate Vice Chancellor and Dean of Student Life, Katya Armistead, requested a safety plan because of all that has transpired from that meeting, from the November 15th meeting. I mean, to me, my job is to support the internal vice president's decisions about where to convene.
Okay. Period. Marquez said that the way the April 10th meeting occurred was in line with what the safety plan was meant to look like.
As you saw on April 10th, some senators were allowed to be via Zoom and some other senators were in the room. And I supported the internal vice president and the campus by offering to and supporting the whole thing by having a set of speaking agreements set up with those physically in the room, and those that were assembling via Zoom were also invited to have some agreements about what was comfortable.
Lastly, I asked if Marquez wanted to comment on the resolution or the concerns some students or senators may have had about the public forum speaker censorship due to the complications of that day and the Zoom format. She said she wasn't sure, but that we should learn from our experiences to create a better protocol for the future. Adler and Shauna both mentioned that the administration and the internal vice president were concerned that the events of the November 15th meeting might repeat themselves. For context, that was the meeting senators voted in favor of condemning Hamas and rejected a resolution to condemn Islamophobia and anti-Semitism due to the lack of Muslim voices included in the making of the bill. A demonstration subsequently occurred because of the previously said concern, as well as due to the lack of language in the resolution regarding Palestine, and boards, committees, and units, or BCU, concerns over censorship by AS. During this meeting, police were called over an altercation, which consisted of a pro-Palestinian student knocking a phone out of a pro-Israel student's hand while that student was attempting to film demonstrators.
People would rather preclude that dialogue that they don't like, hearing perspectives that they don't want to hear. And it was really troubling to me to feel like instead of rising to the occasion, being the adults that we are and having those difficult conversations together, the university and the internal vice president couldn't come to a consensus as to ensure the safety of attendants and senators. And in response to that, puts up barriers between the student's body and the elected representatives of the Senate.
Shalhnov and Adler both maintained that whatever developments they had so far heard from the university, they were not yet able to share with the public. Shalhnov went on to say there was no specific credible threat or a specific threat made. It also seemed to be about the November 15th meeting, and referred to the protests that happened that day as a quote-unquote disruption.
And while that was a legitimate concern that I think many in the Senate shared, I think our position was that we had a plan in place and we had made changes since the November 15th meeting to try to mitigate that. And regardless of whether or not people disrupted a previous meeting, disrupting future meetings because people disrupted a previous meeting, it creates a very bad incentive structure. And it doesn't actually serve the goals that we're trying to accomplish. Disruptions to our meetings do occur occasionally, but the reality is that the best way to respond to them is keeping calm and carrying on. And that's because the purpose of the disruption is to break the democratic process and prevent the meeting from occurring normally. Obviously, there are exceptions to this when there's like actual specific safety threats. But in the case of the April 10th meeting, there were police present within feet of the building the entire time the meeting was happening, and that had already been pre-planned. There were a half dozen campus safety student peers that were there. So we had a pretty good security infrastructure as well as a decent set of community rules and things like that. I don't think anyone communicated that there was a direct legitimate concern. I think that there was generally sort of a vibe that was put off by administrators and by others that, hey, let's be careful of this meeting. And then that kind of spiraled one way or another, either through Soham or through the administrators themselves. And that's what we're trying to determine into causing this meeting to first get taken to Zoom. And then we were able to uncancel it.
I asked if by disruption, Shalhnov meant protest. He said there are protests which can occur outside or inside a building that he considered a legitimate form of expression, but he did not consider the protest which happened in November to be legitimate because, according to him, their stated goal was to stop the meeting from happening. I asked if by disruption, Shalhnov meant protest. He said there are protests which can occur outside or inside a building that he considered a legitimate form of expression, but he did not consider the protest which happened in November to be legitimate because, according to him, their stated goal was to stop the meeting from happening. Shalhnov then drew comparisons between the pro-Palestinian protesters at that meeting to Trump supporters.
When protests occur outside of or even inside the building in a way that the meeting can continue, that's a protest and that's totally a legitimate form of expression. What I mean by disruption is when people started using megaphones and screaming and shouting in an order to stop the meeting from continuing. And that was their stated goal, was to stop the meeting from continuing. That's a completely inappropriate form of expression. It echoes this like Trumpian ideology of just like stop it because you don't like it. It's right. We need to all agree on the rules and we play by those rules. Once those rules start getting eroded, it's a very, very rapid descent into just, you know, shoving, screaming, and we stop being a legitimate forum for that expression.
The resolution mentions UC Santa Barbara is currently facing a federal probe in the form of a Title VI investigation, possibly regarding discriminatory treatment on campus. I asked the two senators how this might have affected the AS admin staff, the internal vice president, or the university's officials' desire to keep the meeting online. Adler spoke about the incident when the Multicultural Center on campus had anti-Zionist signage and faced backlash, as well as how this may have affected the decision to have the meeting over Zoom.
Just for more context, the Department of Education announced, I think, on April 2nd, that they were opening a Title VI investigation into UC Santa Barbara. And while they didn't mention the specificities of what warranted that investigation, it came on the heels of, obviously, the Multicultural Center demonstration, the anti-Zionist signage that was displayed. And I just came out of a closed session meeting with some members of administration who came to speak about the resolution that I authored. And I want to balance respecting those conversations in closed session while also being as transparent as I possibly can. I think fundamentally, given that the university is in such a precarious position, not even just UC Santa Barbara, but universities across the country, they have to balance this idea of being tough on anti-Semitism when it naturally or when it occurs, and they should do that, But simultaneously, when we have personalities like President Tessa Vexler, who consistently conflate anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism, the fact that an in-person meeting like that regarding her recall, so many student speakers came to talk about how this recall petition was motivated by her Judaism, motivated by her Zionist activism. And in my mind, the potential explosiveness of that meeting could beget circumstances that make it unfavorable for the university as they contend with this investigation. Like, if some pro-Palestinian student comes to speak or some anti-Tessa Vexler student comes to speak and she gets into a confrontation with a student, that kind of altercation could negatively affect the university in this kind of investigation. So I didn't get that sense from administration that that was their motivation, but the fact that it could be interpreted that way is really troubling.
Shahanov also said the investigation was ongoing and spoke about the incident at the MCC.
Speaking broadly and speaking in hypotheticals, when someone's a party to a litigation of some kind, when there's a lawsuit occurring, they typically try to avoid repeating the behavior that caused the lawsuit in the first place because it can make it much worse for them. And I can imagine that would have been a concern that could have been on administrator's mind or advice that was given to them by legal counsel. I want to be clear that, that's speculation. Speaking to the Title VI investigation, the Title VI investigation spurred after the events at the MCC, and that had little to do with the student conduct at the MCC. The student conduct at the MCC did not, as I understand it, broach the line of criminality. The criminal conduct was on the part of the university, where university platforms were used in that way. That violates students' rights to an environment that's free from intimidation.
Here, Shahanov is likely referring to Zionist students who took issue with the anti-Zionist signs that were posted at the Multicultural Center, some of whom were vocal about this incident and the signs which said, quote, "Zionists are not welcome," end quote.
So the university probably wanted to avoid causing more intimidation and more unpleasantness, and they thought a quick fix to that would be Zoom. And our disagreement from that logic is that, yes, Zoom prevents any possibility of physical altercation, but it actually amplifies the possibility for the emotional damage that can occur to parties here, because there's not a real conversation happening. There's no real discussion happening. Zoom is not a forum in which parliamentary processes are designed to work. But in general, universities will very often use this as a way to try to quiet speech that they feel like invites more controversy to their campus than they benefit from.
I asked how Adler viewed this kind of occurrence in the broader context of higher education or in the context of what he's seen during his time in Associated Students.
I think that the meeting change is indicative of a larger issue of not being able to trust the student body to handle contentious conversations, and the fact that we need to take responsibility as a student body for the discourse that we're engaging in. And I feel like transparency, for the most part, the actions undertaken by administration and the Associated Students have been transparent in my experience, but keep in mind, I'm a senator. Like, I'm privy to these kind of developments as they happen. And like, if I was just a normal student, I probably would have a lot of questions and a lot of issues in how these kind of conversations are taking place when it doesn't seem like there's been enough of an effort to incorporate the student's perspective into how we're undertaking these conversations. Yeah, I think the larger issue is just the precarious spot that higher education at large is in, of like, we're getting to a point where the conversations that we have in day-to-day business, especially in regards to Israel and Palestine, they can have such deep ramifications for the university's standing. For one, its legitimacy as a higher education institution, in which they should be fostering free and safe discourse, valuing opinions that seem controversial, and overall trying to cultivate a space where differences of opinion are tolerated.
The resolution mentions that there is a, quote, "widespread disconcerting pattern throughout higher education of precluding controversial free speech on the grounds of safety," end quote. I asked them to expand more on this, particularly regarding campus discourse.
For one, the concept of safety as a metric of our ability to have conversations is inherently flawed to begin with. Like, the idea that, for one, elected officials can invoke the idea of safety to preclude taking accountability, it's just super, super bad precedent, because anything can make someone feel unsafe, right? Safety is a subjective idea, right? So if we're talking about a controversial issue or something that we don't like talking about, the idea that safety can be brought up on a whim and then we're all supposed to respect what your idea of safety is, it just doesn't lead to an environment where students can voice their concerns and have a conversation in a safe, respectful way.
I asked Adler how he believed public discourse could be supported on campus and at Senate meetings.
You know, I've been on the Senate for 2 years, and my colleagues know me as someone with no qualms about being a lone voice, sharing a contentious opinion, especially in relation to Israel and Palestine, and specifically its ramifications on higher education. And throughout my time, I feel like I'm always in a special spot, in that I'm uniquely afforded because of my identity as a Jewish person, but beyond that, being a white, straight dude who doesn't really have to take into account components of my identity that other people have to contend with. And like, when I'm talking with the president about controversial stuff, like, it's not easy. Like, I'm getting a lot of looks. I've been kind of intimidated before. I've been called like a self-hating Jew, you know, Nazi collaborator, stuff like that, you know, and it's not easy, but like, I have to realize, like, it's easier for me than anyone else on the Senate to talk about. And so as a Jewish person, when I make these kind of contributions to the conversation, I'm really trying to steer the direction into one of empathy and one of accountability and understanding self-criticality and self-reflection. That's the best way to go forward in a conversation where we can't seem to agree whatsoever. And that a lot of the times means upsetting the Zionist coalition here on campus, which is unfortunate because I really do strive to have dialogue and have conversations with people across the spectrum.
I asked Adler to elaborate on what he called the quote-unquote Zionist coalition. He stated that he's not referring to a formal coalition, rather that when President Tessa Vexler makes a point on contentious issues related to Israel and Palestine, other senators allegedly coordinate with pro-Israel organizations on campus to have a presence at meetings and emphasize what is being said. He went on to say that he values everyone's voices, but that can cultivate in an environment where it seems one-sided and like that's the voice of the student body, when other voices don't feel comfortable coming to the Senate floor.
I've met with SJP a ton. I've hosted the Divest Coalition at my house. I've gone to Students Supporting Israel, talked with their leaders, gone to Hillel, gone to Chabad. I really do strive to talk to all people involved and see where we agree and where we disagree.
Adler would later add that other executives and AS members often did not attempt a good faith dialogue.
Public discourse can be supported through a student government that seeks to incorporate all voices. That's like essential. And throughout the Senate meetings I've seen, like during the recall meeting, like I went out and I read a statement from one of the people who was hunger striking in protest. And as I'm reading the statement, and as I'm sitting there watching student speakers come up, when like minority students come up and talk about how, why is it in this huge auditorium we see like six people of color? Like, why is that, you know? And this person is sharing their experiences and like feelings of marginalization in our community. And I look across the section and I see people laughing and giggling and joking in response to this person's feelings of exclusion. And that really, it just rubs me the wrong way. I think the number one thing for supporting public discourse is approaching conversations with empathy and taking accountability for our own bad discourse and our own bad ways that we're contributing to the conversation. Because it's super easy and fun to poke fun at the other side, but it takes a lot more reflection and strength to contend with the ways that we're not bringing the best to the conversation.
Shahnav said while he's not planning on being part of the committee to investigate what happened, he wants to get to the truth of it. Both he and Adler spoke about learning from the findings of the investigation to prevent these circumstances from happening again. This investigation is ongoing. The committee will share their findings before week 9 of spring quarter. With KCSB News, I'm Zoha Malik.